welcome to the Oyster Stew Podcast. I'm Libby Hall, Director of Communications for Oyster Consulting. The markets continue to evolve, and so do the products offered to investors. In today's market, ESG investing remains a hot topic, not only for investors, but also for the regulators. Deciding whether or not to offer ESG products requires strategic planning, risk measurement, and compliance. In today's podcast, Oyster CEO Buddy Doyle, along with consultants Bill Riley and Jeff Wilk, share what they have seen in the industry as firms decide whether to offer these products, and what firms should consider, including new product strategy, due diligence, marketing, and the potential rewards and potential consequences of offering these products. Let's get started. Buddy?
Thank you, Libby. I'm pleased to be joined today with Jeff Wilk and Bill Riley, and we're here today to talk to you about ESG. Welcome, Jeff. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
All right. So we've been talking an awful lot about ESG at Oyster and going through some of the statements that have been made by the SEC, as well as some of the things that you read in the press, sort of the response. And there is certainly an ESG movement that has been going strong now for many years at this point, decades, I would say, at this point. But there's also a pushback against ESG that is happening and some questions about the value of ESG investing. And our clients, who are broker-dealers, investment advisors, exchanges, they're mostly into the financial side of ESG and creating portfolios and trading those portfolios. But Jeff, I know you've done an awful lot of work in ESG going back to pre-Oyster time. Can you give us a sort of sense of maybe some of the frameworks out there that firms operate with? It seems like there's an entire alphabet of different acronyms for frameworks.
Absolutely, buddy. And thanks for having the conversation with us today. I think, you know, your initial comment there, I mean, ESG goes back to the term being coined back in 2005. So it has been a while. I know when you look at the popularity of it, or I guess you can call it the growth of it, statistic I had seen earlier this year referenced over 90% of the S&P 500 companies currently publish some form of an ESG report out. So, I mean, that's a tremendous statistic that's out there. And the term I like to say is you know, ESG, it's not just about the E, right? There, you know, each of those letters have their own deep perspective and frameworks behind them, whether it's the environmental for the E, the social for the S, or the governance for the G. They're all getting focus these days, whereas they had started really on the environmental side as an offshoot of the old socially responsible type of investing. And it just kind of morphed into more of the environmental. But now it's kind of across the board.
Yeah, I think you've seen that. And that certainly, you know, had an impact as consumer preferences have changed to put their money where their beliefs are. I think that you've seen the industry follow suit and create products and services to match those preferences. Bill, have you kind of run into much in terms of the ESG structure, both as a regulator, but also as an Oyster consultant? Can you share a couple of high-level observations?
Thank you, buddy. You know, one of the things that, you know, that Jeff had talked about was that there are a lot of firms out there that are now publishing information, offering portfolios, other types of products that are available. But I think the one issue that's very important is reliability. And I was reading that the organization by the name of Governance and Accountability Institute reported that 70% of companies in the Russell 1000 published sustainability reports in 2020. However, only 86% of the institutional investors surveyed in 2021 were skeptical about the information that was published. So I think that alone is the fact that you've got somewhat of a credibility, somewhat of an issue there where people are reading information but have some questions and doubts about that. And I think the one thing that is extremely important when you look at some of the covenants involving, you know, securities, securities regulation, securities offering, full, fair disclosure. If companies and individuals don't believe the information, they can't look at it and say, this is reliable, then you've got issues. And I think that's why regulators such as the SEC and so forth have stepped forward and looked at proposing regulations that really began, as Jeff said, this stuff goes back, you know, to the 80s and so forth. But I think, you know, what we're talking about is activity in the last 5 to 10 years that has really kind of set the benchmark for these products that are now calling themselves ESG.
Yeah, and I think, Bill, when I look at some of the ESG products that are being offered out there, and I think we've gone through some at Oyster where we talk about what they're marketing and how they talk about their investment decisions. Sometimes it's very hard to figure out how they're making an investment selection. What is the determination of an ESG standard? And I think some of these, we're starting to see a bit of a maturation in some of these reporting frameworks, and we're seeing some institutional players coming in who are really putting a more sophisticated framework around this. I know S&P is somebody that's pretty well known in the financial services business, and they have a standard, the Global Reporting Initiative, which is one of the first ones. Actually, I think the first standard for reporting your sustainability is well known, and they've covered a lot more topics as you grow. The UN has some standards as well, but I think it's really coming up with those and then being skeptical. Certainly, if you are a firm selecting investment portfolios, you're going to need to understand what a company is relying on when it says it is environmentally friendly or clean or green or whatever phrase they're using. You got to know what that means. And how do you get to the bottom of what that means, Jeff? What kind of due diligence are you seeing being done on these funds?
You know, but it's a great question. And I kind of like to put it this way as, you know, first and foremost, if there's a firm who's thinking of getting into an ESG strategy from a investment firm standpoint, a broker dealer, an RIA, hire the professionals, right? So look to the people who do this full time. And at least you're starting off from a position of strength in your due diligence process. It doesn't mean you're done there, but start with, you know, there's a whole plethora of named firms out there. I'm not going to pick any one out to single out, but there's many of them who are mainstream investment firms, asset management firms who are focusing in on ESG and all phases of ESG, who have a good track record. Now, there are some examples out there where it may be that the underlying investments of some of these mainstream asset management firms are not yet living up to what they've stated they're going to do from a corporate perspective. So you've got to be pretty certain about their level of investment due diligence in the portfolio when you're hiring them to be your portfolio manager. So it's kind of this multi-level approach that's taking place. And I think it touches on Bill's comment earlier about reliability. I really like that because, you know, that's where the skepticism is amongst a lot of folks. Like, you know, if you can't scientifically measure it, how do you do accurate due diligence? And in what that leaves the door open for is skepticism on if what you're choosing is going to be reliable or not.
And we've noticed regulators kind of weighing in as a result of not having reliability or not proving reliability, which is actually what regulators generally need, is the proof that the reliability is there. You don't get a presumption of you did it right out of the regulators. You have to prove it to them. And I think that we're hearing a lot from regulators. We're hearing from it from the commission, and we're hearing it from states. And Bill, I know you're particularly tied in with state regulators as a former alumni of that, I guess a current alumni of that group. What are you hearing from regulators about this?
Well, I think one of the issues is that you know, what regulators are looking for is to establish a level playing field. Okay, we want to make sure that there are standards that are established. Now, you mentioned about, you know, the UN initiative, and there's other initiatives and standards that are out there. But I think one thing that regulators want is they want all firms to, again, send the same message. So I think the one thing that we've seen, and it's unlike anything that I've seen in my career as a regulator and almost 10 years now as a consultant with Oyster, is the number of rules and regulations that have been proposed. And one of the things is there's been some criticism that's been directed at the commission and also some of the states that are kind of weighing in on some of these areas here, that these rules and regulations are coming out fast and furious. There's also a limited amount of comment time. And at the end of the day, regulators are going out and conducting examinations of these firms. Now, Jeff has talked about, you know, some of the large firm, you know, medium size and so forth that are engaged in, you know, the ESG, quote, business. By conducting examinations, I think what the regulators are seeing is they're seeing different issues and identifying those issues. And I think that's why you're seeing the promulgation of rules, regulations, and a pretty good focus on firms, especially disclosure. Is information, again, we'll go back to the viability and reliability on the data. My experience is when you're seeing rules and regulations proposed, it's generally because there are issues. Everyone's all over the place on these, and you're trying to bring some sort of standard into play here. So we all are operating, as I said, on a level playing field.
Yeah, and I think that level playing field is still being defined and probably will be for a little while. I think we've generally overcome, at least on the E part of ESG, the denial that climate change exists. I think we're probably 10% of Americans don't believe climate change exists if you read some the latest polls, and that's a lower number than it ever has been. So it does seem like while we're getting pushback on ESG investing in certain circles, it is getting smaller, the number of folks that are pushing back. They're pushing back and saying you can't meet your fiduciary obligations to your investors while implementing an ESG strategy. And I think that there's probably a lot of counterpoint to that. How do you deal with the pushback that's coming from certain pockets of ESG, or do you just deal with it at all in terms of a response? What do you think?
I think what's happening now, some of the younger generation, they're more in tune with the environment. They're more in tune with social diversity. And as you said, there's a lot more mainstream people that are now, you know, starting to look at the environmental and the social area and accepting it. But I think the key to it are the millennials and young people now who are now, you know, starting to invest in the market, feel differently about, you know, the way society and the environment should be handled.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a generational viewpoint that, and I guess that makes sense, right? If you're going to stick around for a while, you probably want the place to be nice. I do think that when I hear some of the pushback on ESG investing, you can't, you know, have a fiduciary responsibility, I start thinking about time horizons for investments. I start thinking about decisions companies are making. And I look at the laws that have been passed. You start thinking about sort of the, if you're selling automobiles and you're not investing in electric automobiles, what will you be selling in certain states that require electric automobiles in the next decade or so? Will you be ready? Can you retrofit a plant? How long does it take to get that process through? And I think some investment firms are looking at that and saying, we want to be with the folks that are thinking about the future. But I do think that if you're planning to to make an investment in this, you ought to come up with the reasons why, other than just consumer preference, because I think you may get challenged from time to time about that investment decision. And it's certainly loud right now in certain circles, and it's clickbait for social media and all that kind of stuff. Some saber rattling going on to get elected with your base. But I do think that investment firms, by and large, ought to really be thinking about where the assets are and how people are making investment choices. So, and Jeff, I don't know if you've seen investment choices being aligned around this more and more. Certainly feels like it to me.
You know, from an investment standpoint, look at where the assets are, look at where the assets are going. And I think, you know, to the earlier comments from already today was, you know, make sure you know what your strategy as a firm is going to be on that, on your marketing side of your investment portfolios, and stick to it, right? And then people can make a choice whether they believe in the environmental aspect or not. If they believe in it as an investment strategy, and you've done your due diligence to provide them with a, you know, good selection of investment vehicles, I think that it could possibly be a win-win, whether they believe in, you know, XYZ or the climate change or anything like that. I mean, there are other things you're seeing happening, you know, these days with the S and the G side, political climate, wars, and firms making very, very big decisions to pull out of countries as a result because of social impact or the governance perspectives of it. Things you may not have thought of 12 months ago. So there's a lot of actions to be looked at, whether or not you're on one side or the other of a debate.
Yeah, and I think in the social side of things, you know, you see consequences as a result of these decisions for the places that companies are leaving. And I think that some of those can be really tough for a country or a community, and some of them are really meant to be tough for those countries and their communities to try to drive change. To your point, Jeff, we've got the war in Ukraine. Firms have made decisions about what they will and won't do with Russia, for example, as a result of those decisions. And I expect to see more and more of that as folks make decisions about regimes, and people are making decisions about what companies they want to do business with, sometimes based off of where they're doing business and who they're doing business with as well. And so you have to be prepared for some consequences to your decisions, but realize there are alternatives out there when you do make those decisions that are useful. I mean, very few firms would have such a market share that you can't annoy, you know, a number of people and not pick up some people on the other end. So I think that is a decision that you have to make, and one you have to be thoughtful about. And you have to walk the talk. I think if you are simply saying you're community minded, but you're not acting community minded, you're going to get called out on that. And it's a lot easier to call people out these days on social media and in other places. And that can cause a little bit of grief for you, and might make you spend a little bit of time defending yourself that would be better used doing something else. But when you do, just remember, be thoughtful about it. Be scientific about it. Don't respond when you're angry. If you're like me, you don't make your best decisions when you're angry. You make them when you're taking in all of the data. You're organizing it, you're looking at pros and cons, and you're making your list, and you're keeping track. That's what you need to do, I think, to stay safe from plaintiff's counsel, from regulators, and to keep you on the right path. Do the work, show the work, look at the work, and if it's not adding up for you, keep working.
Now, if I could just follow up on what you just indicated, I agree with it all. I think the one thing, though, is that if you're in the securities industry and you and you're a firm, you're a broker dealer or an investment advisor, you're a registered rep, an investment advisor rep. I think one thing, if you haven't looked at ESG, you owe it to not only the firm, but you owe it to your clients. I think as more and more people become engaged in social issues, environmental issues, and so forth, I have firms that I deal with today where firms have told me that their clients have come to them and indicated that they would like to invest in environmental related securities. They think that, you know, being a little more green is a wave of the future. They think, like you said, auto manufacturers investing in electric cars, looking at all these different other areas out there. Your clients may be very interested in purchasing and looking at a strategy that is more ESG related. So if you haven't looked at it, I think it's incumbent upon yourself and your firm to take a look at it. And if you believe that, you know, this is something that you do want to engage in, that you put policies, procedures, you get knowledgeable people in the area to work with you to make sure you do it the right way.
Hey, Bill, you know, it's a tremendous comment, I think, because the time to do that research and build your policies and your procedures and your do your due diligence on what it is you're going to say and not say is before that client comes asking you about it. Right. And when you look at the growth in the space, I looked up a couple of growth statistics just on in sustainable investments. $5 billion invested in sustainable investments in 2018, $50 billion by 2020. And $70 billion by 2021. I mean, the growth is phenomenal. So someone's going to bring it up to one of your advisors and ask, what do you think of X, Y, or Z? And you need to be in a position to answer that with some background.
So how do you build your product out in a way that you know is going to be safe and successful? What are you seeing in terms of new product development and the processes that firms are going through? Is there anything different there?
I mean, buddy, what I've seen more recently, call it the past 12 months, is the large asset management firms doing the types of things we've just talked about, right? Which is trying to focus in on a set of definitions, looking at those areas that are truly measurable, scientifically measurable, and relatable then to the series of actions or the investments, and trying to string all of it together that is repeatable in terms of making a product available to the market. So I think because of the complexities of that, and there's truly complexities in any side of investment, but I think the still, you know, relatively new nature of ESG type investing, and your largest asset management firms are still putting the pieces together, dare I say, in a sustainable way. You know, I think you've got to stick with the professionals. I think you got to really do your due diligence on the firms who are stating that they're ESG. They've all got tremendous, tremendous individuals on staff now who can speak to what they do, how they look at ESG. And see if they align with what, you know, a BD or an RIA's own strategy or perspective is on how they want to go to market and talk to their clients. And if there's a fit, do the rest of your standard due diligence work and then look to add them to your platform if it makes sense.
And I think just to throw it out there, there are alternatives out there. There are anti-ESG funds that have been established. There are ones that reject the agenda of inclusion and diversity. And so I think that is something that's available out there. And if you're going to run one of those funds, I would have the same advice to you. How do you select your investments? What is the rationale that you're making? And disclose that fully as you can. Because I think that it's important that people understand that if you've got a security in your portfolio that goes against what you're saying is in your selection criteria, I think you have risk. You don't have to select every single security that meets your criteria, because nobody does that unless you're running an index fund. But I think that if you're going to say you do some things, you've got to be very careful to do it the way you said. And the way to document, from my perspective, is through blunt disclosures that when you read them, they match what you do.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you'd like to learn more about our experts and how Oyster can help your firm, visit our website at oysterllc.com. And if you like what you heard today, follow us on whatever platform you listen to and give us a review. Reviews make it easier for people to find us. Have a great day.